Maybe you've spoken with financial planners before that just did not get you and did not get the big financial obstacle that is six figures of student loan debt. If you want to get where you want to be faster and achieve your financial goals and dreams faster, fiduciary, student loan aware financial planning from our team at SLP Wealth can get you there. This is the only group that I'm aware of that is specializing in profession-specific student loan aware financial planning for folks that have an advanced degree and folks that are trying to figure out how do I catch up and get to where I want to be when you do have big financial obstacles that you're beating back and overcoming. And the great news is you can get to where you want to be really fast, a lot faster than you think. SLP Wealth can get you there if you give it a try. We're giving a special discount just for the listeners of this podcast. And to see what that discount is, you have to go to promo.slpwealth.com. So again, that's promo.slpwealth.com. Give it a try. If you don't love it within your first 30 days, we actually will even refund you your money that you pay in that first 30 days. That's how confident we are that you're going to love this. Again, that's promo.slpwealth.com. Again, SLP Wealth is a registered investment advisor with the SEC, headquarters in Durham, North Carolina. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, and all investments come with the risk of loss. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis, and today we're going to talk about IBR problems and how to fix them. I don't know about you, but going into the holiday rush, I am a little tired. I feel like I've had 15 medical appointments this week with the kids, and I'm just beat. And that's how I feel probably a lot of IBR borrowers are right now. And the reason I say that is because we see over and over and over again people getting all these denial letters for IBR for silly reasons. Things that are not reflected in the law, things that are not reflected in the rules. It's just bizarre. One person I think I saw post online, I applied, you know, for IBR in like April, applied again in August of 2025, still haven't heard anything, still stuck in the save forbearance. That's ridiculous. This has been such a problem this year. But I will say we're seeing some amount of progress. So if for some reason you're not in the IBR program and you want to be, I would just go back to studentaid.gov/IDR and reapply. There are some reasons why people get denied. It's a little bit all over the place sometimes. One of the common reasons people get denied is not having a partial financial hardship. What that means, it's a technical definition of your payment on IBR being lower than the standard 10-year plan for the loan amount you have. The way that's calculated is if you have $100,000 of loans, the standard 10-year is about $1,000 a month. If you have a $60,000 income, you're comfortably coming in below that $1,000 a month threshold with 10 or 15% of your income, which is the IBR payment calculation. But if you make $200,000 a year, and you have $100,000 of student debt, 10 or 15% of your income is going to put you at more than $1,000 a month. In past years, if you were not already on IBR, you could not sign up for it if you had that lack of a partial financial hardship. Partial financial hardship, by the way, doesn't mean you're broke or you're struggling financially. It's that technical definition of whether or not your payment is lower than the standard 10-year plan or not. So the partial financial hardship requirement still around for the pay plan. But for the IBR plan, you're now supposed to be able to apply for IBR regardless of whether or not you have a partial financial hardship. And if you don't have one, then you're supposed to just get the standard 10-year payment cap. Well, guess what? A lot of people, millions of people, were on the save plan forbearance. I suspect that millions still are. And basically everybody is needing to apply for IBR versus already being on it in many cases. And so, you know, if you're already on IBR and you had a low payment that becomes, you know, a higher payment over time, eventually you cap out at the standard 10-year plan and you just ride out on that plan forever until you get forgiveness, if that's what you're doing. But for people who, you know, are switching into the IBR plan, a lot of those people are getting denied for questionable reasons. I think that they're starting to fix this. Department of Ed claims that by beginning of 2026, they will have fixed this and they will allow people to sign up for IBR without a partial financial hardship. They claim that if you got denied, all you need to do is reapply. And then they're going to hold on to your application until they've fixed their systems internally. That's what they're claiming. Seems a little bit sketch, right? I mean, do you trust them? I don't know. But that's what they're telling you to do. So if you, for some reason, are not on IBR and want to be, go reapply at studentaid.gov/IDR. A couple other thoughts in this sort of abbreviated SLP podcast episode this week, because again, I am so beat from all these medical appointments. For those of you that are the primary caregivers for your kids, all of the running around, even if you're not, even if you're a secondary caregiver for your kids, all the running around, all of the appointments, all of the many different ways your kids can get sick or skip school, or caregivers that you hire like aren't available sometimes for various legitimate reasons, but like you still get the burden. I see you. I feel your pain. Know that it's temporary, and know that we should remember all the good things about the season of life, right? In case that's you, I'm just throwing that out there, a little thought of encouragement. But a couple other student loan related things, which is of course why you come here, not for the good dad jokes, because I don't have any. Other things that I'm following are the negotiated rulemaking committee. So the negotiated rulemaking committee is coming out with stuff that basically the Trump administration wants to get into the regulations on student loans. This is an out-of-cycle update, which they claim they could make because Congress requires the OBBBA Act to be implemented by July 2026. Because of that instruction by Congress, the executive branch is claiming they don't have to follow the normal cycle for regulations where it has to all be published by November 30th to take into effect the following July. So what they're going to do is they're going to release a bunch of regs probably in January sometime, maybe February, saying all the different things they're going to do with student loans in 2026 and beyond for the rest of the Trump administration. I would anticipate this is going to be the primary rulemaking session they do in the entire Trump second term. So there's a lot of uncertainty as to what will they put forward in the final version of regs. The big thing that is getting media attention right now is borrowing limits. That's not of interest to current students as much, or sorry, current people, current borrowers that are already done with school. But I'll mention it anyway, because I think it affects the future of your profession, even if you're done borrowing. There is something called a CIP code that certain programs are categorized under. The definition of like professional student is pretty much following these CIP codes, where it's like the regulations say these are examples of professional programs that are qualified as professional student, and it's, you know, this list, but it's not limited to this list. And so the negotiated rulemaking committee came to unanimous consensus that the definition of professional student should be one of these like 10 or 11 professions, plus I believe PsyDs, clinical psychologists, got lumped into that because one time they were included in the professional student designation like one season or something. And so there's like, oh, well, we did it in the past, let's do it forever now. And what got left out, curiously enough, was nurse practitioners, PAs, physical therapists. What does that mean? It means that those programs would be limited to $20,500 per year in borrowing limits if those rules stand, versus other professions would get $50,000 a year. Now, if you think about any physical therapy program in the country besides like an ultra cheap one in like Texas or something, a $20,000 borrowing limit would destroy most DPT programs. People wouldn't be able to go straight up. PA programs would be more likely to get private student loans, as would nurse practitioner programs. But what those low borrowing limits would do is they would exclude the possibility pretty much at all from those three professions getting PSLF in the long-term future. Because if you only have $20,000 per year in borrowing and you're doing it for three-ish or 4 years, whatever, then you're going to come out with like 60 to 80K. And if you look at the salaries, 10% of income is going to cause your IBR payment to be high enough that it's just going to pay off all the loans and you're not going to have anything left to forgive. So these borrowing limits, interestingly enough, would pretty much like wall off any forgiveness for basically the mid-level provider kind of category and allied health professional category sort of within healthcare professions. So that's kind of interesting. It's kind of bizarre that like certain ones are included, certain ones are excluded. And the progressive and consumer advocacy groups kind of jumped on that, and we were like, the Trump administration's trying to screw over nurses, right? That was the headline. And that's partly true, partly not true, because the reality is most nursing programs or BSN programs or bachelor's programs, that's where you get the majority of the graduates in the terms of the number of graduates. And those undergrad programs are already limited based on undergrad borrowing limits. In other words, that's BSN programs are not being treated any better or any worse than other undergrad programs in terms of borrowing limits. It's only the nurse practitioner programs and like the CRNA programs or other like masters of nursing type programs that would be harmed by this, which is a significant number, but it's not the majority of nurses. But I don't know, the headline was easier if it was simpler, right? And the headline was Trump administration tries to screw over nurses. It would be accurate to say tries to screw over nurse practitioners or masters of nursing programs, but it's not accurate to just say nurses overall, probably. That's like a technical distinction, right? I mean, the reality is those programs would be really harmed by a low limits if this final definition sticks. But, you know, the professions that are professional student categories are also going to be harmed by 50K borrowing limits. I mean, 50K is enough to pay for 20K, you know, living expenses and 30K of tuition and fees. I don't know that many professional schools that only charge 30K of tuition and fees these days. I mean, that's going to be really tough. And a lot of people are going to need private student loans. And I talk to lenders sometimes because, you know, we have relationships with a lot of them that do student loan refinancing deals on our website and such. And I'm talking to these lenders like, hey, the need for students is going to be enormous under these new rules for extra borrowing amounts. And for the most part, these borrowing amounts are going to be completely able to be paid back. It's going to be good borrowing. It's not going to be unreasonable in terms of the amounts that people need and the ability of those people will have to pay it back. But the private student loan market's built around undergrads, where you have to have a parent or a cosigner and you need a high FICO score. And that's just like not possible for a lot of these graduate programs where like people are not going to get cosigners really. So I'm hopeful that the private student loan market will develop for graduate students because of the new rules that exist where it's just required to take out private student loans for a lot of people. And I hope that they will allow for a lot of no cosigner options for folks. And, you know, what does this do if you're an existing borrower, right? You might be like, oh, you put me to sleep, Travis. Gosh, this is so boring. I'm going to go listen to true crime. Here's why it matters to you. If you limit the supply of people entering your profession, the price of people providing services in your profession long term is going to increase. So salaries will increase due to these new loan rules. That's not saying it's a good thing. It's just saying that's what's going to happen. So if you have new grads that you're competing with, you're going to have fewer and fewer of those new grads to compete with. What is that going to do? It's going to exacerbate shortages for, you know, your profession, and it's going to increase the leverage that you have over working conditions, over employers, and the pricing power that you have because you're going to have less competition. This is going to be really, really bad news for, you know, dental service organizations that rely on new grads freaked out about their loans. You know, it's going to be really bad news for private equity vet-owned hospitals that are going to have a really hard time being as profitable with all the debt service that they have on the leveraged buyouts of practices they do when, you know, you're kind of budgeting X amount for doctor pay and then doctor pay goes up 20 or 30% long-term and you're like, oh shoot, can I still make my leveraged debt service obligation payments? They'll probably figure out a way to do it because it's private equity, but it's going to put them in a pinch. And also the lack of the value of PSLF for physicians is going to pinch nonprofit hospital systems in a big way. Because, you know, if you think about it, you know, hospital systems could just rely on physicians scared about their $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 medical school debt that desperately need PSLF because the interest has ballooned on it. And they know that they've got young physicians for several years as attendings, and they've got them right where they want them in terms of, you know, them not being able to leave or negotiate over working conditions, et cetera. And I'm seeing, you know, a world in the future where physicians are going to have a lot more power over just having other options besides doing PSLF, right? If you have a $230,000 loan balance, that's $200,000 with interest accrued over the course of a four-year medical school training. $230K, the value of PSLF per year is going to be kind of capped. It's going to be a lot lower than some of the PSLF forgiveness cases that I've worked with in the past where people are getting, you know, PSLF forgiveness of $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 tax-free. That's like, you can't walk away from that. But $200,000 in forgiveness, that'll be fairly easy to walk away from. Also, without the save plan, the payments are going to be higher, so the value of the forgiveness is going to be lower. It's going to be interesting to watch all this develop. Now, this is only going to be the case if these rules stay in place for like a decade plus. They might not. I would not be shocked at all if what I know about student loans, if we see 2028, have an election that goes a different way, different party, and they change the rules completely, a lot more to the old regime of high borrowing limits, generous IDR plans. That's possible. So we need to continue to monitor this. It seems like the Republicans might be in a little bit of trouble in the midterms based on some special election stuff that has happened. So might a Democratic House or Senate use their leverage against the Trump administration to force an early rewrite to student loan rules before 2028? Especially if you see mass closures of physical therapy programs, nurse practitioner programs, even medical school programs at higher cost spots, right? You might see a mass closure of dental school programs that are private dental schools that can't get enough students to keep the doors open. If that happens, you might see some revised legislation actually much sooner than people might anticipate. So do I think there'll be a purpose for the Student Loan Planner podcast past July 2026 when a lot of these new loan rules go into place and IBR supposedly gets simplified? I think probably. But if that answer is no, then I'm probably going to start an astronomy true crime podcast where there's an interesting article in The Atlantic about a guy who faked his own death while stargazing that my wife sent me the other day. And it was super fascinating. And he ended up being alive and had a mistress in the Soviet bloc, former Soviet bloc, and just really bizarre, right? So maybe that's an interesting topic that I could talk about in my astronomy true crime podcast at the SLP podcast. Ceases to have a point, but I think it probably will. And I'm grateful for you who have been along the journey with me for years or months, however long you've been here listening to this. Thank you. I will try to continue to make it useful, entertaining, and fun as possible. And if you have any questions about student loan stuff, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail to leave a question for the pod that I can address. And if you don't have any questions, great. I hope you enjoy your peace and calm, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday season. If you do need a student loan consult, by the way, studentloanplanner.com/book. Anybody out there who knows any Parent Plus borrowers, especially folks without consolidated Parent Plus loans, needs to reach out to us. There's a really serious deadline coming up, probably in spring of 2026, where Parent Plus borrowers who have never consolidated at all need to take action urgently to retain access to IBR. Also, people who need to file their taxes the right way and join or separate, that's a relevant thing to reach out to us about for consults. And people who are trying to figure out how and when do I get off the save forbearance, or you know, what's going to happen with pay going away at some point, what I need to do for that. Those are all good reasons to reach out for consults. Or if you're an SLP Wealth client, reaching out to your financial planner if you need to talk about that stuff. Thank you all so much for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. I hope you have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.